Welcome back to the Deep Dive, listeners. Today we're taking a look back, way back, to a case from the 1970s that, well, still has a lot to say about the tech landscape even today. It's FTC v. Xerox. And if you're interested in getting up to speed on how antitrust laws, you know, especially when they intersect with innovation, have actually shaped the markets we see, then stick around.
Yeah, spot on. This isn't, you know, just a history lesson. What went down in FTC v. Xerox is still really important for how we think about monopolies and competition. For this deep dive, we've got some really interesting sources. We're pulling from research on creating podcasts, a legal expert's take on the nuances of the case, and the standard legal brief itself. We're aiming to give you a clear picture of, well, this pivotal antitrust action against a company that was a real powerhouse in the tech space.
Okay, so Xerox in the early 70s, a huge play. We're talking like $2 billion in revenue. That's a lot of dough back then, right? What exactly caught the FTC's eye?
What got the FTC's attention was what they called unfair methods of competition. That falls under Section 5 of the FTC Act. It's kind of a broader thing than the Sherman Act, you know, the one everyone's heard of. But there's definitely overlap with Section 2 of Sherman, which specifically goes after, like, you know, monopolization. Basically, the FTC claimed Xerox wasn't just successful, they were actively using their muscle to block fair competition.
One thing they focused on was Xerox's lease-only policy. Seems pretty simple, but how did that stifle competition?
Well, think about it this way, right? Xerox wasn't just renting machines. What they were really doing was renting their whole customer base. They wouldn't sell copiers outright, so they locked customers into their system for the long term. And, you know, if everyone's leasing from the big guy on the block, that creates a huge hurdle for anyone trying to break in, even if their tech is better. I mean, why would anyone buy a machine from a newcomer when they're already stuck in a lease with Xerox?
Makes sense. It's not just about a one-time sale. It's about controlling the relationship with the customer down the line. And then there's that package leasing thing, bundling the machines with the supplies. What did the FTC make of that?
That's right, package leasing. So if you leased a Xerox copier, you pretty much had to buy toner and paper from them too. This basically killed any independent businesses that might have offered, you know, better prices or quality for supplies. Xerox had a grip on the machines and then a grip on the aftermarket, all the stuff you need to use them. Imagine if, like, you bought a game console, but you could only get games from that console maker.
So they're blocking rivals who want to sell machines and also the ones who just want to compete on the supply side. Sounds like they wanted to control everything. And didn't they also get accused of, you know, bad-mouthing their competitors?
Yes. There were allegations that Xerox was disparaging competitors' products. Of course, comparing your product to others is normal. But the issue here is that Xerox was, perhaps falsely, undermining their rivals just to maintain their position in the market.
Okay, so we have the lease-only tactic, the supplies bundling, and the alleged, you know, smear campaign. But then there's this massive patent portfolio, over 1,700 patents. Doesn't that just mean they were really good at innovation? How did that become a problem?
This is where things get really interesting, you know, because it highlights a tricky part of antitrust law. On the one hand, patents are supposed to reward innovation, right? But the FTC said that Xerox wasn't just protecting their inventions. They were using this giant patent portfolio to, like, build a wall around their business and shut out competition. It was a deliberate patent barrier. Think of it like a dense forest of patents. That's what Xerox had. This made it super risky and expensive for anyone else to even think about making a competing copier without risking a ton of lawsuits. The main point here isn't just the number of patents. It's that they were allegedly used to stop others from innovating, not just to protect their own work.
So, all this together, the leasing, the bundling, the alleged disparaging comments, and then this huge number of patents, and the FTC's conclusion was that it wasn't just hard-nosed business. It was a deliberate move to create and hang on to a classic monopoly in the plain paper copier market.
Yes. The FTC's position was that this wasn't just, you know, smart business moves. It was a concerted effort to prevent any real competition from getting a foothold in the plain paper copier market.
And you said they sued under Section 5 of the FTC Act. Why not just go with the Sherman Act, the anti-monopoly law? What's the strategic thinking there?
Yeah, that's a good question. Think of Section 5 as giving the FTC a wider net to catch unfair practices, even if they don't quite meet the exact definition of a monopoly under the Sherman Act. Section 5 goes after unfair methods of competition, which is pretty broad and can cover a wider range of business practices that might hurt competition. It does overlap with Sherman Act Section 2, the one specifically about monopolization. But using Section 5 gave the FTC more room to take on Xerox's tactics, even if you know, each one by itself wouldn't have been a legal monopolization.
So to win a monopolization case, you usually need to show two things. That a company has a lot of what they call monopoly power, and that they've been actively trying to keep that power, the willful maintenance thing. How did the FTC make the case that Xerox did both of those things?
The idea of monopoly power really depends on how you define the relevant market. This is where the FTC made a strategic choice. They didn't say Xerox had a monopoly on the entire copier market. Instead, they narrowed it down to the plain paper copier submarket. That's clever, because in that specific area, Xerox's dominance was clear, so it was a much stronger argument for monopoly power. Then, for the willful maintenance part, they argued that Xerox's lease-only policies and that aggressive patent strategy weren't just the result of being innovative. They were deliberately put in place to exclude competitors and keep their grip on that specifically defined plain paper copier market.
It sounds like they were saying, okay, Xerox, you invented a great technology, but you went too far using your patents and these leasing rules.
Yeah.
It's not just about protecting your inventions, it's actively blocking anyone else from even trying to compete.
That's a really good summary. They weren't necessarily saying that innovation is bad, but that using your power to stifle competition and keep control of the market crosses the line.
So all of this leads up to a big legal fight, but it actually ends in what's called a consent order. What is a consent order in this kind of situation, and what did Xerox have to agree to?
A consent order is basically a settlement agreement. In this case, it means Xerox agreed to certain conditions that the FTC set in order to resolve the legal action without actually admitting they broke any laws. The main things Xerox had to do were license their plain paper copier patents to competitors, so they had to share some of their tech advantages. They also had to drop the lease-only policy, giving customers the choice to buy Xerox machines outright. And lastly, they couldn't badmouth competitors' products anymore.
The main goal here was to inject some healthy competition into the plain paper copier market, right? Open it up for new companies.
Exactly. The idea was to break down the barriers that Xerox had put up. Forcing patent licensing and allowing sales was supposed to create opportunities for new players to enter the market and actually compete. A lot of people say this consent order is what paved the way for companies like IBM and Canon to become major forces in the copier market.
It seems like a pretty practical solution, right? Because a full-blown trial can drag on forever and cost a ton of money. Was that a big reason they went with the consent order?
Definitely. Trials are unpredictable and can take years, and both sides have to spend a lot of resources. A consent order gives you a faster and more certain outcome. For the FTC, it meant they could get real changes in the market fairly quickly. And for Xerox, it let them settle the whole thing without having to admit guilt, which could have been really bad for their image and their bottom line. It's a way for the FTC to influence what's happening in the market without a long, drawn-out trial.
So even though Xerox never admitted they did anything wrong, this case and the consent order were still a big deal. It kind of set a precedent, right? It showed that the FTC was ready to challenge these kinds of practices, especially in the tech world.
You know, it's interesting that even without a court actually ruling on the core issues, this consent order was really influential. It showed that the FTC was willing to look closely at what big tech companies were doing, and it kind of became a model for dealing with antitrust concerns in similar industries.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at later antitrust cases like the one against Microsoft or even how big tech platforms are being scrutinized today, you could definitely see the influence of this Xerox case.
All right, so we've taken this deep dive back to the 1970s. Why should anyone listening today, even if you're a law student or just someone interested in business and tech, why should they care about a case that's so old? What are the big lessons that we can still learn from it?
This case from 1975 is still relevant today. Here are three key takeaways. First, there's the idea of patent misuse as a potential violation of antitrust laws. It shows that even the special rights you get with patents have limitations, and you can get in trouble if you use them unfairly to block competition instead of just protecting what you invented. The second takeaway is about how important market definition is in antitrust cases. The fact that the FTC could define the market so specifically as the plain paper copier submarket was key for their case. It shows how crucial it is to accurately pinpoint where a company actually has a lot of power. And lastly, there's the flexibility that consent orders give regulators. Consent orders allow the FTC to step in and shape markets faster than they could with a long trial, which is especially helpful in fast-moving industries like tech.
It really makes you think antitrust isn't just about whether prices are too high for consumers, right? It's also about how these dominant companies control access to technology and whether they're using that control to hold back innovation and limit what consumers have to choose from.
Exactly. The Xerox case wasn't about the cost of copiers. It was about how Xerox's control over the technology and the way it was sold prevented a truly competitive market from developing. That principle, the idea of keeping things fair and stopping too much power from being concentrated in one place, that's at the core of how we think about antitrust even today.
Wrapping up this deep dive into FTC v. Xerox, it really does make you think about those big tech companies today, right? All the debates about control over app stores, how data is packaged, or even how software patents are used strategically. It seems like many of the same big questions about market power and competition that came up in the Xerox case are still very relevant now.
It really does make you wonder, right? In our current world, where control over important technology platforms and vast intellectual property is so vital, are there companies with a lot of market power using strategies that might be different from what Xerox did, but are still harming competition and slowing down innovation? It's definitely something to keep in mind as you watch how the tech market continues to evolve.
It is. Lots to think about. Thanks for being with us on the Deep Dive. Until next time, keep those minds sharp.